Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast. Osiris.
Welcome back to Undermine Season 4. I'm Tom Marshall, and I'll be your tour guide, your fish tour guide, as we travel back in time to Destination 1.0. This season, we'll be revisiting 25 monumental shows from the 90s on Fish's road to the tour that changed everything. Well, and of course, that is fall 1997. And when we arrive there, we're going to stop and look at every single show of that tour on that show's anniversary. And in that way, we can be your companion on this ride as we go all the way back and listen to those groundbreaking shows. My co-host for today, of course, is fellow Undermine executive producer and manager of Billy and the Kids, and also New York Times bestselling author of the book Deal, Benji Eisen. Hi, Benji.
Hey, Tom. I am so glad that we're talking about the show that we are today. I've always kind of adored it. It is 4/21/92 from Eureka, California. And the venue itself has always had this certain mystique to it to me. It's a fairground that is nestled in the redwoods of Humboldt County. And if you check out the venue's website, as I did last night, it's actually... these days, at least, it's more of an RV park than it is a concert site. And most of the concerts that it has seems to be like these flag-waving, God-loving country acts. So imagine that if you can. You know, I don't know if that was the case back then, but, you know, it's this weird dork rock band from Vermont landing in the fairgrounds of the Emerald Triangle, a place where, you know, weed was the number one commodity long before legalization. So, you know, was the crowd that night, was it a lot of pot smoking deadheads? You know, I'd imagine, right? And I also think, you know, some of the band's earliest tour heads, you know, there are Bay Area fans that were stoked for the Northern exposure and a little road trip. But either way, whatever it was, it led for a truly wacky night of Fish. They let their freak flag fly that night, and the show is simply electrifying. It's from... yeah, right. It's from April 92. So that is the month that it's earned the title amongst fans anyway as the first great month of Fish. I think, you know, whether or not that's true, it's just that, you know, every show that month was notable for something. And every show was also unique, just like the fall 97 tour that we're kind of working up to. But Eureka in particular, it's one of those shows that has a little bit of everything. It's got a Colonel Forbin's narration. It's got the big jams. It's got teases galore. Fishy antics, including they do this banter that apologizes for their cover of Lively Up Yourself by explaining that they weren't trying to make fun of the song. And in doing so, they kind of devolve into this vocal jam that kind of makes fun of themselves, you know? And also I should say for that, that song, the Bob Marley cover, it is, I think, the only known time that Mike Gordon was playing the vacuum cleaner solo while Fishman plays the bass. And then of course the show also has that tweezer, and I suspect that tweezer will be our focus today.
By the way, Mike plays the vacuum cleaner all the time, but just never in public.
Huh. Very interesting. there you go. So this was his first his public debut of it.
Exactly.
For 2192, and not again in public since that we know.
Yes, exactly.
You know, so I can't wait to talk about this tweezer, but first, as your co-host, Tom, I think it is my beloved duty to remind everyone to subscribe to Osiris Premium on Apple for ad-free podcasts, bonus episodes, and more. Okay, Tom, tell us why we're about to hear more about this tweezer.
Okay, well, I'm extremely excited. Today's special guest is very special. And yes, her name has been associated with the word tweezer in certain ways that we're going to go over. And that's also the case in today's episode. And as we dive into each of these shows, we're going to have a special guest who is either at the show or can otherwise shed some light on it or, have something to say about it in some particular way. Today's special guest, I'm delighted, is Holly Bowling. And we're so excited to talk to Holly again. I'm going to let her in from the waiting room in one moment. I had Holly on my podcast Under the Scales probably about 6 years ago now. And unlike almost every other interview I'd done, Holly came to my house and honored me by playing my piano. And it was probably the best that piano has ever sounded. And Holly at the time was touring as a solo pianist, supporting her then new project, Distillation of a Dream, which was the one that transcribed Fish jams into piano interpretations. And I also saw her live in Philly and I believe in New York doing that. And it was such a great tour and I loved it. The Tahoe Tweezer might be her best known jam transcription. And Holly continues to perform solo and with various projects, but is also a full-time member of Ghostlight, a great Philly bass band. And I'd like to say hi, Holly, and welcome back. How are you?
Hello.
Yay, there you are. How's it going?
Going good. How are you guys?
Super. Where are you right now?
I'm home. Where in San Francisco.
Okay, West Coast. All right. Yeah, we got two West Coasters. I'm holding down the East Coast over here. So Holly, as I mentioned, your well-known cover of the Tahoe Tweezer came from that show in 2013. But you also transcribed, arranged, and performed the tweezer from this show, 42192, as well. And I was wondering, when did you first hear it and why you chose to give another tweezer that treatment, your special Holly Bowling treatment?
A friend of mine, Eric Gould, was telling me that I had to listen to this tweezer and that I should really transcribe it. And people right after I did the Tahoe tweezer, people would tell me this all the time, whatever their favorite jam was or, you know, whatever tweezer they heard most recently. Oh, you got to transcribe this. You got to do it. You got to do it. I was like, yeah, whatever. And I've never been like my favorite era of Fish was never like the early, early stuff, you know? And so I kind of wrote him off and was like, it's never been my favorite. I still love it because it's Fish, but it's just never been my number one. And B, I was like, you know, the like super dissonant tension and release stuff from the early eras doesn't really translate it as well to what I'm doing with it. You know, solo piano, like super dissonant stuff, just building and building it. Like it doesn't have it just doesn't translate as well. And he was like, no, dude, you got to listen to it. It's not what you would think out of 1992. You know, it's totally different and you got to listen to it. And so I was like, all right. And I went and listened to it. And I I think I texted him halfway through and was like, holy shit. Okay. You're right. You win. Yeah. And I'm totally going to do it. And it's, you know, it's, so that's how I got there.
I agree with you. It comes from the April 92 where Fish is kind of making a transition from that old Fish that you're talking about, and I agree with you about it. It's really interesting to hear, but it's not the stuff that I want to be listening to when I'm, you know, rocking out or whatever to Fish. But can you talk about, you know, what made this tweezer? This is when they're beginning to go type two and they're beginning to really experiment a lot. And I feel like this tweezer kind of just nails it. Can you talk about, from a musical standpoint, what makes this tweezer special? You know, what do they do that's different than just I don't know if there's a standard tweezer, but you know, what do they do from the template?
I mean, I think there's not a standard tweezer, and that's what makes it so good, you know, at least for me. But, you know, one thing that I absolutely love about Phish is all the different thematic ideas and themes that are built throughout the course of a jam. And sometimes that's one thing that'll be taken on a huge arc for 10 minutes and taken to its logical conclusion. And other times it's a bunch of different thematic ideas that are, you know, briefly developed and then it'll flip to a new one. And that one's briefly developed and maybe we'll revisit the first one, or maybe it'll be like, you know, walking through each of these scenes in a film one by one. And each one of them is new. And this one is like that on steroids. You know, it's all these different musical ideas that are thrown out there, and, you know, either Michael introduce it and Trey will latch on, or vice versa. And they just, you know, it goes from like super dissonant to like, very, you know, and very minor to like super blissed out, beautiful, you know, major glory. And it's just, you know, I think part of what makes that so cool too is it's still sandwiched between the super dissonant tension and releasey stuff from the early era of Phish. And so, you know, the major stuff coming out of that just is that much more powerful and kind of unexpected, you know? So.
Absolutely. Holly, maybe to catch people up a little bit, because we started right in without giving you a chance to say kind of what you're up to. Are you in the middle of a tour right now, or what are you doing? Like, the next time you get in front of people, where will that be and what will you be doing?
I am not in the middle of a tour right now. I just got home from some shows in Colorado, and Ghostlight is going out on tour in a couple of weeks. We have a new album coming out in October, and we're doing a few weeks out in the Midwest and in the Northeast. So I'm enjoying a little time at home before we head out for that.
Oh, perfect. We definitely covered it when I talked to you before, but to bring people up to speed about what we're talking about here in case they haven't heard you, and I encourage you guys to go check out Holly Bowling after this. But back in your solo piano days, when you covered a song, it's much more involved than what most bands think of when you're talking about covering a song, because you like break it into components and you gave each component a name, and then you spend hours and hours deconstructing it, figuring out what all the instruments are doing, and then somehow reconstructing it just for piano. And it was fascinating. Fascinating.
It's a bit of a different animal than, you know, if you're covering a song by a four-piece band and you are a four-piece band, you know, you're it's a different thing. I'm coming at it with those arrangements with sort of a a super nerdy classical background. And the original idea was to take the idea of, you know, way, way back in the day, someone might take a piece of music that was originally written for a symphony orchestra and arrange it for a trio or for a single instrument or something like that. And I wanted to do that, but with the music that that is, you know, near and dear to me, which rather than being a symphonic thing was Phish. And so, you know, I write out each of the parts on manuscript paper and get really meticulous with it. And then, you know, obviously I can't play all the notes that everyone's playing, nor would it sound good to do that on a single instrument. And it, you know, I'm also not going for perfect recreation. I think it's a balance between being true to what was done and using the source material, and like having all of the very meticulous, accurate information there to draw from, but then trying to figure out what is actually being said by all of these notes and rhythms right here, and which elements should I pull out, and how can I weave them together to turn it into something cohesive that still has that same arc and drives to the same peak as the original piece of music that I fell in love with. So that's been the approach. And then, you know, the other thing for me is over time, when I first started doing the jam transcriptions of like the Tahoe Tweezer and the Chicago Wedge and this tweezer from 92 in Arcata, I was really, really focusing on recreating these jams in a, you know, reframing them on piano. And then I've, you know, over time sort of shifted my focus into still arranging songs, but then using them as springboards for my own improvisation at the piano and a lot of like weird extended techniques inside my instrument and just like playing with a whole different palette of sounds in there. So it's cool. It's, I think at the beginning I kind of used the improvisation by my favorite band as like the source material to get really, really deep into the nitty gritty of what was going on there. And then that kind of informed how I wanted to improvise on my own instrument in a different way. So it's kind of full circle in a weird way.
It's just incredible. It's incredible what you do. It's incredible that you can do that with a tweezer, because, you know, it's always like, sometimes when you listen to Phish, it sounds so much bigger than just four guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you're able to do that with just one. And it's absolutely amazing what you do. And I also love how in the process, you really get to dissect what they're doing in a particular jam. So, you know, and you really get into the DNA of the jam. So by doing that, do you think that are there any other tweezers? I mean, one of the things that I love about Phish jams that are like historic, like this one that we can go back to all the way in 1992 and re-listen, is that there's an evolution, and sometimes they revisit themes, and sometimes they revisit things like you said, doing this major bliss in between, you know, dissonance and things like that. Are there any other tweezers that you can think of that musically kind of reference or overlap with like the improvisational themes that are found in this one? Or, you know, like, can you find stuff from this tweezer in 92 in other Phish?
You know, that's a super interesting question.
A dorky question.
I'm not going to pretend like I'm like, you know, tweezer only and have listened to, you know, you know, all tweezers all the time to try to pick them apart like that.
I just mean, like, are there themes and do you hear echoes of this tweezer elsewhere in Phish?
I don't feel like, as far as the like musical themes, like the actual motives that are in here. But I guess I would look at it more in the big picture way of like these like shifts in color and emotion from, you know, dissonant and chaos to like super sweet major bliss to some of the really dark minor key stuff. It feels to me like this is at like a hinge point from, you know, the super chaotic, raw, manic, dissonant tension and release stuff. And then like looking down the line to these, you know, like take the Tahoe Tweezer, if you want to take my favorite here. That one has a bunch of different thematic areas too, but they're much more fully developed and they're much longer. So here there's like probably just as many ideas thrown out, but they're just like fast and furious. You know, they're in it for like 16 bars or 32 bars. And then someone has something else that goes out there and the whole thing turns on its heels and goes in another direction. Whereas, you know, fast forward 20 years and you're looking at, you know, I guess each one of those thematic ideas, same kind of deal, maybe the same amount of musical themes thrown out there, but they're just exploded. You know, each one just blossoms into a much bigger thing before they finish up that arc and then move on to the new one. So I guess that's where I would look at the overlap, right? Is that this is sort of like almost portending the future, you know? It's like it's like the little oracle, the little crystal ball of like, hey, future Phish is gonna do this, but even bigger, you know? It's like, because I also don't feel like, it's not like after this one that this became the new jamming style right away, right? Like I feel like this is really like, yeah, it's a window into what's to come, kind of.
incredible in that it's a window into what's to come. And at the same time, as you just said, it's also very unique.
Yeah, I can't think of another one like this. And I still laugh about how hard I wrote this off at first when it was suggested to me. I had to eat my words.
That actually is a good setup for my next question. So you mentioned that a gentleman had given you this idea, and you didn't really listen much to this era of Phish. Are you familiar eventually? Did you go back and listen to this whole show, or are you really only just familiar with that song? Because we chose these, these particular shows as we're leading up to 1997 either they're like super high quality or something amazing happened. This one is kind of like both of that. It's like a taper favorite.
Yeah, I had heard it, and I listened to the whole thing when he suggested it to me. But it's not one of those shows that I know cover to cover by heart, you know. I went back and listened last night, and just to, you know, kind of give myself context of what happened before and after the Tweezer. But the thing that I listened to on repeat was definitely the Tweezer over and over again. And for the record, I'm not like anti early Phish, right? Like I find it so insane, like, and so the energy is so manic and so dissonant that like I love to listen to it if I'm like driving down the freeway at 80 miles an hour, you know. But if I'm like having a conversation with someone, like the music,
not so much.
It's having a conversation with you at the same time, you know. It's like, okay, like nothing else can be happening for me to be into that era of Phish. And then the other hang up for me is like I just really love listening to the stuff, you know, once Paige got a piano. the whole sound changes for me, but not writing off the era by any means.
No, but I mean, I think also for me and for a lot of people I know, it's we've heard that era a lot, but then it's like listening to the newer eras are just because they're new. And that's the thing about Phish that's so incredible, is how they just continue to evolve and change and keep us interested. At the same time, a Tweezer like this, because it is so famed and so iconic, when you played it live, I'm curious, like you've performed it live a few times. When you do, you know if there's anyone in the crowd that just like recognized it as, oh, that's the 1992 Tweezer, or did you announce it beforehand, or did you wait till afterwards?
I don't think I ever announced it. I'm trying to think. It's been a long time since I played it, but yeah. And you know, honestly, when I'm playing, I'm so in my own world. Like I'm very like walking a tightrope, you know, that level of focus to try to pull these things off technically, you know, in particular the jam transcriptions. It's like very, but you know, I've written some challenging arrangements, yeah. for myself, made my life difficult here. So I don't usually notice anyone's reaction at the moment, but it is cool, you know, after a show to have like one or two people that are like, I know exactly what that was, and I knew from the third note, and like, holy shit, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm sure there were a few other people out there that were like, what is going on? But you know, some people definitely are like, yes. I remember,
go ahead, Benji.
I was just gonna say, it also must be hilarious to hear people, you know, especially for if someone new comes to one of your shows, to hear someone yell out like 421.92.
Yeah, dude, it's really funny. I was there was a point in time where I was doing these, I was calling them jam teases. So it wasn't a full jam transcription, but I just take like whatever the like recognizable moment is from a jam that I really loved, or like, you know, a really cool point that's like the hinge where it goes into something cool or whatever, something that's recognizable. But half the time it's like 15 minutes into a song, you know, like there's the Camden Sand, I think it's 99, but it's got like a super cool theme in it. Anyways, I'd work one of those jam teases into the middle of something else completely different in a show, and people would recognize it, you know, that just to me was such a testament to what Phish has achieved, right? Like, tell me another band where you can play a 30-second snippet of a particular version of a song that's been played hundreds and hundreds of times and stick it in the middle of something else on a piano, like not even a recording of the thing, but like a piano arrangement of it. And a bunch of people in the room will be like, oh my God, I know exactly what that is and I love it. Like, I don't know. It's cool.
It's outrageous. Outrageous.
To take a quick break, but if everyone listening sticks around, Holly Bowling will still be here when we come back, we hope.
And as promised, we are back. I'm Tom Marshall, and I'm here with my co-host for today's episode, Benji Eisen, and our very special guest, the talented Holly Bowling. Holly, thanks again for sticking around. And I wanted to continue a question that Benji asked before we went to break. And it was something that he reminded me of. And it's kind of something that happens like a tension almost with the audience. You say that you get into your own world. And I went to a Steve Earle show, and he's famous for talking a lot, but he didn't for like three songs. And he was kind of like looking down. I think he was like preoccupied with maybe his guitar wasn't working right or something. And he finally said, well, now I'm going to talk because I've found that if I don't talk in three songs, there's this uncrossable chasm that develops between me and the audience, and I could never get across it. And he said, I have to break it right now. And I was thinking of this thing that you had said, which was sometimes you get like the audience gets quiet, and of course they're listening to you and they're concentrating and you're working. And then I remember like you said that all of a sudden in the middle of Squirming Coil, the audience starts, their only part where they participate is they all yell like almost randomly for the people that are working at the venue, little Jimmy's off to camp
every time.
That must be so trippy for the workers there.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I mean, I think about that at fish shows too, right? Like people that are, you know, working the show and don't know anything about fish and all the like, you know, insider
we
jokes
love
to
take
go
a bath.
On.
Yeah.
Yeah. They've just got to be like, what the hell?
They definitely don't love to take a bath, you know? Yeah. Well, so we're talking today about the 421 Eureka, California show. And if I remember correctly, you first started seeing the band actually in 2.0, right?
Yeah. My first show was New Year's 2002.
And I was just wondering, with all the stuff that you're doing professionally now, if you're continue to actively see fish live.
Oh my gosh, I'm dying to see fish again. I haven't seen fish since the pandemic started. And my husband has gotten the pet. We had a kid during the pandemic. So it's been kind of a like trading off who gets to go. So he's seen a few shows. I have not, and I am dying to go. I almost made it to Dick's and yeah. So there I'll be back. It's a phase. It's a, you know, I'm spending a lot of time on the road and want to balance that with actually being home to see my baby. But
you have a super youngster. How old, and congratulations.
Thank you. He's 18 months.
Oh, cool.
So I think he's old enough now. I think next time I go, I'm going to bring him with me and we'll just have a big old party together.
And of course you have a baby grand for the baby.
I actually have a full-size grand in my living room, my very small San Francisco living room. The piano takes up the entire space. It is awesome.
Well, Holly, you know, I know that you do, you continue to play solo shows as well as I know the Ghost Light obviously, you know, has a full schedule coming up and you also do a number of other projects. But do you think for your own solo shows that you'll ever play this Eureka Tweezer again?
I don't know. It's funny. I've like kind of moved away from the jam transcriptions, but now you're kind of making me like, like I listened to it last night. Right. I'm like, oh man, I do want to go play this again. So I don't know. I'm doing my first run of, like proper solo shows, like, you know, evening with not opening slots, in November, December on the East Coast. So I actually have actually have some set lists to write there. So maybe this will make an appearance.
Awesome. Well, Holly, Benji, anything else for Holly? I think we've hit our.
I think we've hit everything. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And for the audience, remember to review and subscribe wherever you listen or watch. And that is only if you like us, of course. And if you don't, save it for Fantasy Tour. on the next episode, we'll be stopping by the woods of Vermont on a snowy evening. In 1992, and the band's guest that night was Carlos Santana. Almost as cool, our guest for the show will be one-time Phish employee, Shelley Culbertson. We'll see you then, and in the meantime, don't do too much that we wouldn't do. And thank you so much, Holly, for coming.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Really, yeah. Really fun. Great to see you again.
Great to see you, too.
See you out on the road.
I hope so.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Osiris. Hey you, do you have any plans this year? Ha! How's that going? Did you get 2020? Well, welcome to a brand new podcast called 2020, where myself, Benny Goodman, and my good friends Corey Pazin and Siobhan Cronin from the band Lost Symphony also got 2020.
And since the world ended this year, we decided why not just check in with some of our friends in the music industry and see how everyone's doing.
We're going to get a candid look at life on and off the stage, as well as the mindset of some of the most successful people in the entertainment industry.
New episodes drop every Sunday and Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern.
And you can listen at 2020-D.com, SoundTalentMedia.com, or on your favorite podcast app.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life. And then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers. Think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.